Hi, this is Jonathan Morris. You might know me as the co-host of Through the Aftermath, and normally at this time we'd have one of our normal comedy intros. Unfortunately, with this being episode 50, we don't have one this time. Because unfortunately, I've just been thinking about what we're going to do on this. Sean, I don't know if I can do this.
What's wrong?
Dude, I don't know. This is normally where I'd have the intro sequence, and this whole time I've been thinking about what we're going to talk about. Episode 50, it's a huge deal. I mean, if you think about it, we're actually bringing everything full circle. Last time we talked, what started the show is the fact that we talked about Wasteland, and here we are about to talk to Brian Fargo about Wasteland 2. So it's like, this is a big epic moment, and we can't screw it up.
Oh, I know. This is going to be, I've been thinking about it all day. I mean, Wasteland, that started everything. I mean, it's the reason I have barrels of nuclear waste in my backyard.
It's the reason I moved to the desert. And if you think about it, it's the reason, I mean, you know, even my kids, you know, the names I tried to give them, I tried to name my daughter Angela Death Morris. And yeah. You know,
your wife wasn't happy about that, was she?
She wasn't. We settled on Aaliyah, but I still say I had a better idea. But I mean, if you think about it, I moved to the desert of Utah because it looked more wasteland-like. You know, when you go to work, you travel in groups of only four people at a time.
That's true. And I always conserve my ammo. You know, when I go to work,
this is true because, you know, ammo is scarce where we live I'm doing it again. We're losing, you know, and every time I see a wall, I want to shoot a mortar at it. And unfortunately that's just ended badly for some of the local neighbors. And I, you know, I am concerned that maybe we don't want to be fanboys. I mean, I admit it. I'm excited as all get out. I mean, I've every game that Brian Fargo wrote, you know, Neuromancer and Wasteland. These are all games that set the stage for who we are. And I just think this has got to be perfect because it's like Wasteland, man. I mean, if you think about it, you know, Wasteland was persistent. It saved the game. And if we screw up, it's like that for us. Like episode 50 could be like, yeah, that's the time they jumped the shark.
Oh no, not the Fonz.
That's it.
Let's practice then. Let's get it down. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Ready? You're going to start us out, so. Yeah, okay.
All right. Hello, Brian. Oh, no. Hello, fair and bright. No. Hello, Brian. What's his name? Brian Fargo?
Hello, Brian. Welcome to the show, Brian. Brian Fargo. Welcome to the show, Brian Fargo.
Welcome to the show, fair and bright.
Now I'm doing it.
Oh. Welcome to Through the Aftermath, episode number 50.
Big 50. Episode 50. The same amount of hours, at least, that I clocked in Wasteland growing. I did it again. You know, when I was in the Boy Scouts, did you know I made him call us the Desert Rangers at one point?
Oh, I hope you're not going to tell him that. You know, when I was younger, I had a dog, and I actually named him Dog Meat.
That's funny you say that. That's what I tried to name my second child. Again, the wife was upset. Who knew?
All right, so we're going to do this. This is it.
Okay. Yeah, this is it. I'm ready.
Ready? Okay. This is it. No more stalling. We're going to call him. We're going to call Brian Fargo, and we're going to get this done. Episode 50.
Episode 50. Here we go.
Deep breath. Okay.
You gonna call him?
I don't have the number. I thought you had the number.
Why would I have the... Why? You gave me the number?
Yeah, wait, I gave it to you.
Okay. Oh, no. It's over here. It's not here. Oh, wait. No. No, it is here. No. Okay. I think I can read it on the paper underneath. It's... Are you ready?
Yes.
Four?
Okay. Oh, we're dead. Welcome back, everyone, to this 50th episode of Through the Aftermath. I'm your host, Sean, and with me, once again, is my co-host, Jonathan. How you doing, Jonathan?
I'm great. It's episode 50, which we never thought we'd ever get to say, so...
I know, it's funny because most people do 50 episodes in the first year, and we've been doing this for, what, like 4 years in this podcast now? And
well, in the wasteland, we can only get the signal for so long before changing batteries. So.
That's true, yeah. The batteries, they're so hard to find. But
that's right.
For this 50th episode, this is such a special occasion, we had to bring on some special people. So we have with us, from InXile Entertainment, we have Brian Fargo and Nathan Long. How you guys doing?
Excellent, excellent. Great.
Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you guys on the show. I've actually talked about on the show before. Brian, don't go back and listen to old episodes because I've fanboyed before about you. On we met at GDC, I believe it was 2 years ago, something like that, and I talked to you there, and that was before the whole Kickstarter thing, you know, before you did the Kickstarter for Wasteland 2 and before we got all that, before you got that all set up. And we talked quite a bit. You showed me that video, that you were doing for the kind of with that kid in there. I mean, that was a hilarious video. I loved that thing. So at the time, I think we did an episode after that, Jonathan and I did, and I was talking about how great it was, you know, to meet you and then we started talking about Wasteland and how influential that game was on all of us. And, Jonathan used to do, well, I guess he kind of still does a podcast called, The Online Gamers Anthology. And Jonathan also did an episode about Wasteland there also, and I was on that show, and we were talking about Wasteland and our influences, and it's just it's a whole big thing that got us to this point, I think, not only in gaming, you know, with me working at Joystick, but also, you know, our love for post-apocalyptic. I mean, at that time, you know, Mad Max movies were coming out, and all these, you know, pop culture was really pointing towards that, and like it is now again. And I think that it's kind of a, you know, it's come full circle, and I think it's a perfect time for Wasteland 2 to come out. So that's why I'm very happy to talk to both of you. We'll talk about, you know, talk about the game and everything. But before we do that, I want to know about your influences in post-apocalyptic everything. Brian, we'll start with you. Now, are you were a big fan of the genre itself before getting Wasteland, the original Wasteland, together, right? Is that why
yeah,
you made Wasteland?
Yeah, absolutely. Since as a kid, I mean, I maybe a psychologist needs to break me down as to why I like it. But, you know, I can think of, I was always drawn towards the material. And I think some of, like one of the earliest things, and not exactly post-apocalyptic, but like Planet of the Apes, mm-hmm. you know, which was a sort of ruined Earth and, you know, kind of the last man on Earth kind of thing. Was kind of the first one I remember. And then there was, I read comic books like Commandy, The Last Boy on Earth was one of my favorite comics. And then, you know, probably The Omega Man.
Oh, yeah.
Right, which scared the hell out of me. I was just a kid. But it really got cemented when Mad Max and The Road Warrior came out. I mean, I bet for a decade when people would ask me, what was my favorite film, I would say The Road Warrior, just over and over.
Oh, yeah.
And so all of those I absolutely fell in love with. And then there was a great book by Robert McCammon called Swan Song. And that's still one of my top 10 favorite books of all time. And if you like post-apocalyptic, you've got to read that book. It's somewhat derivative of The Stand, but it stands by itself. And the characters are fantastic. And it's a wonderfully written thing. So yeah, no, it wasn't me looking at post-apocalyptic and saying, hey, I can make money with it. It was, at the time, you know, I had done Bard's Tale, and I had the ability to do anything else I wanted, and so I picked that genre.
Very cool. Nathan, what about you?
I think the beginning of my love of post-apocalyptic fiction is probably The Road Warrior. Before that, I was, and I still am, very much a sword and sorcery kind of guy. Mm-hmm. That was the kind of fiction that I read, and the kind of comics that I read, and all that. But I saw The Road Warrior before I saw Mad Max, mm-hmm. and I was living in England at the time. I was in England. It was 81, and I wanted to be a punk rocker. That's why I was over there. I was over there to get into a band and try to make a name for myself. But I was failing at that, and I ended up going to the movies like two or three times a week because there was nothing else for me to do. And I saw in very quick succession The Road Warrior, Time Bandits, The Warriors, and Southern Comfort. And those four movies, but in particular The Road Warrior, made me say, you know what, I'm going to go to film school and become a screenwriter.
Wow.
And I did. I came back from England. I went to school and then eventually came out to Hollywood and became a screenwriter. And it was quite a bit of it was because of how good and how brutal and well-made The Road Warrior was. And I fell in love with that. I like to draw like comic books and that kind of stuff. I'm not very good, but you know, for the 10 years after that movie, everybody that I drew had shoulder pads and a mohawk. Uh-huh.
And of course you're well known for your Warhammer books as well. Yes. So being on the fantasy side, how would you say that those play off of each other? Is there a lot of crossover?
To me, the setting of something like, you know, whether it's post-apocalyptic or whether it's fantasy is sort of icing on a cake of story. So you have to make sure, regardless of what your setting is, that you're telling a compelling, moving story underneath it. And then, you know, you can take the basic building blocks of a story, a story about a guy who's going off to save his, you know, his girlfriend, and you can put that in fantasy land or you can put that in post-apocalyptic land, and as long as you get the details right, you know, well, as long as you have a strong story, the icing of genre that you cover it with is, you know, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So it's not so much crossover. It's like everything comes from the same well of story. I hope that made sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So would you guys say that the movies, the books, all of this, the media itself from post-apocalyptic, I mean, that has kind of influenced you to that point. And, of course, Wasteland, the original Wasteland came out in, what, 87, was it?
Yeah, 87, 88, right around there.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's more than a couple years ago. And, now here we are at Wasteland 2, and the storyline itself, you have Nathan, you have Mike, is Michael Stackpole working on it as well?
Yeah, he's written some of the material also.
Okay. So, I mean, you have these amazing authors working on the storyline. So is the story going to be the big punch of the game?
Well, I think that, yes, of course. You know, for me on all these games, it's always been that the journey is really the reward. And it's the individual moments that are both scripted through the writing and the small human moments. And it's also in the systems that create your own moments. You know, for example, when we have NPCs that waste ammo or steal from you, you know, we're using the system and we're in that world. And so those are the moments that I think are the most important. The overall story arc of course is critical, but you've got to be enjoying yourself, you know, because you're in front of these games for, you know, tens of hours. So, you know, there's a lot you want to make happen between the two points.
Well, and it's funny you mention that when you talk about the characters doing that, because that's one of the things I remember most about Wasteland 1 was because you could take, you'd ask one of your characters for his weapon and he'd tell you no. And I remember at the time thinking like, wait, that my characters can't tell me no. And that was one of the things that really stood out is the fact that there was that kind of level of immersion. And though, you know, you would think firsthand that something like that would be almost like irritating, but it sold me on it. It made me go, it makes me feel like I'm really traveling with other people. And I think that's what's so neat about this is you're keeping that same kind of theme.
Yeah, no, it's very powerful. And by the way, if you want to, or we'll have a, you know, where you're looking at your inventory, all of a sudden something's gone, you know, and you realize this guy that's in his inventory, and you say, give it back, and he says, no. Well, you can kill him, you know, if you want, you know, so and get it that way, or you can live with it, or deal with it later, or use him for a while and kill him. I mean, your choice, right? So, you know, I love the kind of the complication. What's nice now is if you'll remember, in the first wasteland, it was not as strategic, right? I mean, you're basically moving one little icon around for the most part. Even though you could split the party up, most of your traveling was as one little icon. Well, now you're traveling as a group, four people, seven people. So we have a lot more we can do from a personality perspective. You know, we could have an NPC that every time you go into battle, he just takes cover and hides and cowers, you know. But, wow, you know, he might be good for some other uses. So I love those aspects of it because you're telling a story through the system and you're doing it with things that are meaningful, right? So if they're wasting ammo or stealing things or disrupting you in combat, that has real tangible meaning to you. So I think there's that part of the storytelling. But as far as the overall story, I think that we owe the first Wasteland fans a sequel that nods to the first one, that makes a lot of sense and kind of continues. Because a lot of people, they've been waiting for 20 years. And there's nothing worse. I don't know if you, I'm sure you guys have played games or gone to movies and said, did they watch the first one? Like, they just missed all of the elements. And so we have bent over backwards to make sure we captured the characters, the elements, inside references, etc. Now, that said, if you've never played the first game, you don't need to know any of that information. None at all. Okay, but if you happen to have, it's going to just layer on to the experience. In fact, we have little things because ours is a keyword system. So you're very much sort of, you know, conversation nouns unfold as you have the conversation. But there'll be other parts where you can just type in a keyword. So if you happen to have had information from the first game, bang, 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 type it in, and you might get some piece of information or access to an area you would have never had otherwise. And so I think that that's really cool for people. Again, not you had to do it. But it really, you know, sort of pays homage to the first one in a big way. But the storyline on this is far more complex. I mean, I think we have 300 characters in this game. This game is, I mean, I was trying to figure it out today. It could quite possibly be the biggest role-playing game I've ever worked on.
Wow.
Wow.
That's all my fault. Sorry.
You know, it's funny, you talk about the old one, the original one, and Jonathan and I were talking about this one time, about how all the side stories that were in the manual, you know, if you cheated and you looked at, you know, you looked up certain ones, paragraph 20 or whatever, instead of the actual ones, and then, you know, you start finding all these things about spaceships and
Mars.
And Mars, and you're like, wow, like if you cheated and read ahead, you know, I find that's fascinating. It's not really something you can do again these days, you know, but that was a brilliant thing. I always loved that.
Yeah, well, we might have some characters in Wasteland 2 that went crazy trying to find some of the stuff that was listed in that first paragraph.
So Jonathan's in the game? Wow.
Oh, man.
Still looking for the Rachitin armor.
So good. See, that's what I'm loving so much about this, and I really believe that that's what so much of these Wasteland fans are looking for, because in so many ways, it's almost like this big family reunion for all of us that, you know, were involved, even from the fan standpoint, because you're bringing back so many people, including Mark Morgan doing music. Yeah. And it's so cool to see everybody come back, and it's like you're able to kind of make the game even more so that you intended to make before. Like, you, this time you can really flesh out everything that you had wanted to do originally.
Oh, it's been wonderful. I'm very fortunate that this whole thing came about the way that it did, you know, because via crowdfunding, people have given us all the money up front and said, we trust you. And so that's allowed us to sit around and do really subtle, clever little things all the time. We just get, you know, to me, the big ideas are just as important as the small ideas. Like that little thing that I described, some guy looking for the old armor from the first Wasteland paragraph system. That is just as important to me as anything. And we have the ability to sit back and do all that crazy stuff. In fact, we're already making kind of the second and sometimes third reaction passes, looking for more subtlety stuff that we can do. And callbacks and to set up something that happens 10 hours later in the game, or have other events where you see it, and then only after playing the game do you look back and go, ah, and then having it made sense, having finished it. And that's the fun part that, you know, that we get sort of making the game the way we do. We get this sort of tinkering and this crafting that we get to do with nobody's hovering over us, trying to, you know, enforce any kind of business practices or having to hit milestones and those kind of things that might take away from this super healthy process that we have.
Well, and it'll show up in the writing too, no doubt, because, you know, you can tell you guys are having a great time doing it. And it's funny because I see the same thing, comparison. I see the same thing as well with, you know, with Chris Roberts and Star Citizen, because you can tell they're having fun because they've been dealing with, you know, corporations up until now, and now they're making the game they wanted to. And I see that with you guys, like you're doing the game you want and no one's telling you how to do it. And you're having such good time being able to do that. And I love that that's how this is playing out.
You know, and I have to say, you know, like, obviously everybody cares about the graphics and the music, but we're very much hanging our hat on the writing. And, you know, good writing can really make a difference. And Nathan here has been doing an absolutely wonderful job. And we have you're just bumping around. To me, in these games, you need to be able to walk around doing nothing and still be entertained. And funny written stuff or interesting written stuff or text that foreshadows or even like the barks. Nathan, I want to say, and you correct me here, Nathan, but like every single character in the game, certainly character type if not character, has a different bark. So when you walk up on them, what do they say? When you attack them, what do they say? And when you walk away from them, what do they say? And each one written in a very kind of clever way. So, you know, we love the whole such and such explodes like a blood sausage, you know, that kind of stuff, right? There's like combat text that's specific to almost every character in the game.
We wrote combat text for every character in the game and crossed it with every weapon in the game.
Oh, so, my goodness.
So every time you shoot somebody or somebody shoots you, it all reads like it calls out the person who shot you, the weapon they used on you, and what happens to you, and all of those things blend together. So, yeah, there's a lot of that stuff.
Well, and what a great idea, too, because you guys kept exactly the same kind of look and feel. And I remember, like, when Fallout 3 was made, and a lot of people who were the diehard Fallout fans were kind of like, you can't make it first person, and it worked well. But for you guys to be able to take, you know, all these graphics engines and could have done anything with it and chose to go the route you did, what a brilliant idea, because it is in so many ways paying tribute to the original one and keeping that same feel. And I think it's going to be everything that we had hoped.
Well, I think there's a great feeling of people that played either Wasteland 1 or Fallout 1 or 2 that feel like, finally, this is the game we've been waiting for.
Yes, yes, definitely. And that, and it's funny how even to this day, there's so many people who still regard, for example, like Fallout 2, I still regard it as one of my favorites, and Wasteland is the one that I will always, I actually consider Wasteland to be one of the first things that got me into post-apocalyptic things at all. That and of course, Road Warrior. And by the way, you're right about Swan Song. That is probably one of the best books I think I ever read. Ever since Wasteland, I still, to this day, I actually still have the box, and I still remember that, you know, that shot looking down where you see the shadowed group on one side and then the robot on the other. And I think it's so much fun to watch this be made, because it is like a family reunion, kind of going back to growing up and what made that fun again.
Yeah, it's like getting your favorite band back together.
Yeah, that's a very good way to put it. Yes.
Well, you know, sometimes when I talk to people about Kickstarter, like, especially people like you guys, you know, kind of get it, but, you know, people that are outside our business or not in the business, you know, not in the business at all, they're like, I don't understand why. They can't understand why people would give us the money up front to make the game. It just kind of blows their mind. But I always say, look, when you were young, was there some kind of band that you just love their music and you used to listen to their music all the time as a kid? They're like, yeah. I go, what if they got together and they said, you know what, we're going to get another album for you. Would you give them $20? And they're like, yeah, we would. I go, well, there you go. Yeah. We're the same thing.
That's a good way of putting it, I think. Well, let's talk about the story a little bit. I'm not sure how much you can say, but so the original Wasteland, of course, took place in the year 2087 and in the Southwest of the United States. It was following a nuclear war, which happened in, I think, 98, was it?
Yep, it was 98. 98.
Right. Yeah, 98.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, it's following a nuclear war set in the Southwest and way into the future. Is that kind of the same Are we going the same place in the same type of apocalyptic?
Yeah. Nathan, I'll let you kind of describe sort of where we pick up from there 15 years later and what's going on and kind of the first missions and that sort of stuff, and we kind of be vague after that.
Okay, well, all right, you stop me if I say anything. I'm sure. Basically, yeah, we pick up in the same place 15 years later. We have brought the four main characters from the original game into the new game. They have aged, they have taken on new roles, they have...
Remind them who those people were.
Thrasher, Snake,
Angela Death.
Snake Vargas, Angela Death,
and Hellraiser.
Hellraiser. Those four are the ones that we name check, and some of them are in the game. Some of them you hear about, and you know you can discover more about. The basic idea. I'm afraid to say too much, but the basic idea is that the Rangers are starting to hear strange broadcasts. Then they're not sure where they're coming from, and so the team of Rangers that you create is. Assigned to go out and find out where these broadcasts are coming from and if they are a threat to the Arizona Wastes. And you find out quite a number of sort of secrets about how these broadcasts connect to the old game, and there is a definite through line from the old game into the new game.
And I'll just add on, and Nathan's being... sensitive to what he reveals, that and I've talked about the fact that eventually, after much gameplay, the Rangers will make it to L.A. And there's a lot of cults that have that are prominent in that area.
And so I love it.
It gets very weird, and one that I've talked about. And I know there's a German magazine going to give some radio call here in the next month, which I can kind of speak to, is, you know, for example, there's one group called the Mannerites, which are everything's about civility. And it's very, you know, Mr. Manners and Landers, but they're also cannibals. So they're the most polite cannibals you would ever want to meet. And more important than the cannibalism is how the decorum of everything and stepping outside those lines brings hugely negative repercussions. So that's just sort of one of the strange people that you'll hear. And that's where the radio broadcasts come in, where we have a fair amount of audio where these people are getting on the airwaves and espousing their philosophies or trying to harm the Rangers and set them up and make them look bad and any number of different and odd things.
Yes, the Mannerite's philosophy is that the end of civilization isn't an excuse for a lack of civilization.
Yeah, but they're very positive in their thinking. In fact, I think one of their slogans is "There's no cant in cannibal."
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, so it just gets really weird. And I love weird.
That should just be the tagline. Wasteland 2, it just gets really weird.
I love it too, because it's funny that you mentioned that, because it plays off on what I love about Wasteland and Fallout, which is that underlying humor that's sort of blocking the dark behind it. And what's more horrific than a guy who's smiling at you, you know, super wide-eyed, going, you know, "Hey, pleased to meet you," and you're almost more weirded out than you would have been if the guy had been holding an axe. You know, there's almost something more unnerving that he'd be that civil about it, even though you know something's hiding behind that. I love that you're playing off that.
Well, there's plenty of that, so if you like it, you're going to enjoy it. And to me, the most... You know, another important aspect is that you are experiencing something different through every hour that you're playing. That all the way from beginning to end, you're experiencing new people and new tactics and new weapons and new game mechanics, you know, any number of different things, so that you're constantly stimulated. And because the game is it's so deep and varied, it's like a big Rubik's cube, and it's a virtual impossibility. You could probably take 50 people, have them all play the game, and then sit down and all talk about it afterwards. They'd all have a slightly different experience.
Wow.
Nice. So would you consider that like a sandbox game?
Well, in that way, I mean, you know, some people have said that Wasteland was the first sandbox game. I mean, we bend over backwards to allow you to play it the way you want, right? You know, do you want to come in the door through a front attack? Do I want to blow it up with demolitions? Do I want to go get the password and sneak behind? Do I want to have my thief go over around the back and have him open the door, or go in and kill the people first? Or, you know, so putting in all those kind of different, that's what makes, that we can do difficult and interesting puzzles. That's the beauty of an RPG, because in an adventure game, if you hit a puzzle and you're stuck, frustration sets in. But in an RPG, there's always a way around it. So we get to do all the complications and difficulty, but not be hurt by the fact that there's only one way to do something.
Well, and that's what made it stand out, too, because I remember that was one of the first things that struck me with Wasteland when I first played it, was just trying something, going, wait, is this going to work? And then watching it not only work, but it worked well. Like, can I blow the gate up with this rocket launcher? And it would work. And then you'd talk to your friend, and he'd go, I never tried that. And he tried something else, and it worked for him, too. And I think your game was honestly probably the first game to ever try that.
I've heard that, and I've probably said it a few times, not being 100% sure, but I can't think of another one that did that at that level. So yeah, no, because it's very rewarding, you know. And the thing about RPGs is that I don't know what the percentage is, but it's very high. You sort of plan on a very large piece of it that people will never see. You're assuming they're only going to play it one time. So I think it's painful, you know, for some people to say. I remember even when we did our little Bardstale game, we had a whole song and dance number that we knew most people would never see, but it cracked us up. So for the ones that found it, it was great, you know. And so same thing here. We just have whole little moments that we know most people will never see unless they play it over and over again, or that others tell them about. But that allows for that freedom that you're talking about.
I would say that, you know, the guys what do they call it? Speed? What is it?
Speed run to the game?
Anybody who speed runs this is going to miss over 60% of the content.
Wow.
Yeah. If you're just driving towards the ultimate goal at the end, you can get there and just walk past stuff that would open up entire new areas. So,
yeah, and the other thing that we're playing with on this game is I'm revisiting what the end of a game means. You know, I like taking that, you know, if you are just an asshole in Arizona and you're just killing everybody, are you really a desert ranger at that point? You know, what would happen? You know, maybe we should look at something else happening if you are not performing other than, because there's some things you do that I don't want to kill you, but I also think, you know what, you're not going to see exactly the end game that somebody who might have played a little more straight up would have played. So I really like the concept of playing for what the ending is.
Yep.
Oh, I can't wait. And thank you so much for doing that, because honestly, one thing, and you guys probably, what you're doing addresses this, is it's so weird to have watched, you know, the gaming kind of shift from what it used to be of the story and more about the look. And it's funny that people, I think, are now starting to figure that out, that, you know, and I, you know, a lot of that is because of games like your game, or, you know, games like Minecraft, where somebody was like, wait, that was better. And then they kind of back up and realize, wait, maybe story is more in depth and that should be more important. And it's a shame that we've kind of lost that. And I really believe that your game is going to be kind of the awakening for a lot of people who maybe haven't tried this kind of game, had heard about it. And this is going to be the one that makes them go, you know, maybe, you know, the first person shooter isn't everything that I thought. There's this whole level of interaction that I didn't know could exist.
Well, it's going to be fun hearing people talk about the game, because one person is going to go, you know, I did this, this, and this, and this happened. You're like, are we even playing the same game? You know, oh, I love that.
Wow. I cannot wait. It's almost like my 20 years ago, like I'm back at that age again, only this time I'm like, I'm trying to hide it more because I'm supposed to be adult.
Yeah, well, it's overrated.
Being an adult, yeah. What would you say is the kind of the top reasons that people give for why Wasteland, the first Wasteland, was such an impactful game on them?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first one was, I mean, most of the RPGs at the time were more like Bardstale and Wizardry and Ultima and Might and Magic, and so they were for the most part straight up fantasy. But you know, again, we get back to the sandbox thing. They were more like where everything was focused on the combat, and I think less on the world state. And so I think that the sandbox nature of it. I also think that the morality was a bit of a shock. And of course, the old Bobby scene where you get the rabid dog attacking you, and then you kill it, and then Bobby goes, "Have you seen my dog?" And then you think, "Oh God, I feel bad. I killed his dog." And then so there was those moments, and then there was, of course, the taking things to their ridiculous conclusions, which was, then Bobby attacks you, and you're Rangers, you could have walked away, but people tend to fire back at, and then all of a sudden he's dead and there's gravestones and the rest of the kids attack, and it just goes from bad to worse. I think that was something that people just, they weren't used to, and I think being the use of skills, the idea that you could level things up by using them, it wasn't just killing things and getting experience points. And I also give a lot of credit to the writers on that they were able to write some fun stuff. And in addition, there was just a lot of little, there was so much, I mean, that's the other thing about these games. Like, I like to throw things in that have nothing to do with moving the plot point forward. I think sometimes films are so fixated on that. Like, you always know this thing, you're going to run into stuff in the first one and the second one that it just has nothing to do with winning the game. but it's out there, So, and I think Wasteland 1 had some of those same things. So there was always a sense of where you'd scratch the surface, and it just seemed like the world just kept getting deeper.
Yeah. I think that's actually a really good point. When people would ask me why I liked that game, I could never really explain it, but there were parts that I always remembered, and one of them, like you were talking about Bobby and his dog, and how Hypo would turn into, nothing. It would get deserted if you went a certain way. And it's kind of that same thing with the howitzer. When you blow up half the... where was that? Was that in Needles? I forgot exactly.
You blew the wall out?
Yeah, you blew the wall out with the howitzer when you found the shell. And it was like, you can't go back. I just blew this up. I can't get that back. And I love that. You know what I mean? There was a finality to it that you didn't really find in a lot of games.
Yeah. You couldn't go... And it was okay that you couldn't go back. It didn't mean you couldn't win.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to move forward, and maybe there would be a positive or minus to it, And there were just little things about, having to disband a female member only into the women's restroom. Little moments like that.
Well, and it was persistent, too. That was the thing. I had a friend who absolutely was just screaming because, the world actually saved and stayed persistent. It wouldn't reset. And I remember, and it kind of goes back to, where you'd play Ultima 3 and a guy would die, and you're like, no! And I remember him playing it, and I remember many times him trying to reach over and, flip the disc open because it's like, oh, no, I just did this, and I'm going to ruin it, And I'm like, oh, too late, bud. Yeah. But it made it real. It made it special because it was your story.
Right. It was. There was a permanence to that, and there was also a constant pressure on ammo.
Yes.
It was never like I'm going to just run around like a first person shooter, blowing everything up with infinite armor and saving game every 2 seconds. Which that's just there. You know what it was is there was tension.
Yes.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And so I imagine that. Yeah, I imagine you've discussed all this already in meetings and discovered what it was about the original, to bring into Wasteland 2. But is that tension then brought over to Wasteland 2?
Yeah. In fact, right away. I mean, one of the first radio calls you get is you have two towns both on the radio demanding you come help them. And you can only help one. And the one you don't goes down. So you're going to get a sense of that right away.
Oh, nice.
So, I love it. And so the only way you're going to want to experience that is you're going to replay the game because there's things being turned off left and right based upon what you've done, and you can't just undo all the time to redo it. You got to play, So yeah, that sense of permanence, that's the thing. If you do a really deep game, you can do all the permanence without the punitive sides to it.
Wow. Now, one thing I'm curious about, too, is, you know, the gamers of the 80s, you know, Jonathan and I, when we were, you know, early teens and playing these games, you know, we had a kind of a different set of, you know, patience and different set of virtues for, you know, reading through the manual and going through the story and everything. Do you think that gamers now are different, and do you think that that's something you have to cater to a little bit?
Let's see. Well, I think that there are certain things that people are not patient about. So I think we have to, you know, acknowledge that there are some aspects of things that have changed. So we'll keep that in mind. But you know, it's like there's a lot of text in this game. But you know, but how much we display at any one given time, I think we have to be careful of. Like, I don't think you want to step on every time you step on a square and paragraphs go by. Right, I think that people would not, they would be too bogged down by that, even no matter how brilliant we thought the writing was. So we have to kind of pick our spots for when the text flows and other areas where it stops, where it's more meaningful to really read it all because it's a major moment. So I'm always sensitive to the inside of whatever's going through the players' heads are at any one point. And I play it myself. I mean, I try to, you know, I'm able to somewhat remove myself and, when I first start playing my own games, I'm very sensitive to writing down what am I enjoying and what is irritating me. And it's important that you write them down right up front, because something that irritates me won't irritate me after three more times. I'll get used to it just like that. Hmm. And so I make sure to get those things down quickly so I don't forget those things.
Interesting. Because so it's kind of like a reverse of where you hear people who kind of watch their same, you know, clips over and over, and then they start to kind of nitpick it. In this case, you're almost needing that first response because that's going to be the response of the player.
Right, right.
Interesting.
Plus, although, and I have to say, we have a kind of a benefit here that we didn't have on any of the previous RPGs, is that we're going to be able to have some open beta testing. So I'm going to be able to, and we're going to try to build some metrics in so that we could watch what people are doing. Like, if 50% of the people get to this door and never get around it, I'd like to kind of know that, you know, or how, when do they stop playing? So it'll be interesting for me to be able to watch them, and so I can better analyze where things might be bogging down for people, so we can just, you know, better give them better direction or ease things up or whatever the case may be. Or there may be an area we want to be difficult, and we think it's great that 50% of people can't figure it out. It's like a dance, you know. It's a lot. We have to just, we got to get the game together, get people playing, and then watch how it flows.
Well, and it avoids that bottleneck that a lot of RPGs get, where, you know, we've all played RPGs where somebody will say, oh, wait till you get to the last half, it's the most amazing part, and then the first half is, you know, there's things not quite clicking, and it avoids those bottlenecks where somebody's going to quit playing because this one segment happened to not be moving too quick, but they missed the best part.
Yeah, no, we have to keep an eye on that. And the other thing about RPGs is that, you know, it's like our attitude is we don't mind if you want to cheat, which is like if you want to run around in the desert doing random encounters all day and leveling up and making the game easier, go for it.
Wow.
We don't care as long as you're having fun doing it.
Yeah.
Know, right?
Yeah, because there are different play styles. I mean, that's right. What I like to do, run around in the desert.
Yeah, if you want to just grind up a couple of levels and blow everyone away, you'll probably run around all of Arizona just cracking up because you're killing them all.
I wanted to mention too, you have I think it was yesterday you tweeted about a new and improved UI that will be revealed later this week, is that right?
Tomorrow.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, well, I think that so that was in well, one is you're going to see a new screenshot, which I think looks great, but you know, we're probably on the third rev of the UI. You know, every time we put something up, you know, it used to be in the old days, you would get something to 100% and ship it, or you'd get things to like 90% and then work it internally until you thought it was 100, then you'd put it out. These days, there's elements where I say, get it to 75% and then get it out there. Because my small team of people, including myself, we can't compete with the opinions of 1,000 people looking at stuff. We learn so much every time, and some things that, I mean, they've even taken some of our screens, like we did the inventory screens, and some people on one of the websites, they moved everything around and tightened it up. And I went, you know what? That looks better. You know, I like it. So we don't, like, there's no sense of, like, not invented here. And so specific to the UI, we put stuff up. We kind of said, well, we like this sort of 80s direction. We like kind of the chips and the rainbow colored wires and kind of the dot matrixy look, because that's kind of the 80s look that we want to. So we played with some concepts there. Some were a little too bulky, you know, whatever. So we've kind of made pass after pass. So now we have a new one based upon all that. That's it looks 90% like the last one, but it's a little more, and everything's customizable anyway, I should say. You get to move stuff around however you want, but we just sort of, we tightened some things up. I think the text is more readable, all based upon feedback. So again, we put that back out, and I suspect most people will go, yep, big improvement. So it's just part of the natural process. And I think the scariest thing about Kickstarter is that, and the press have been great, by the way, is you always run the risk of putting something out early and somebody goes, this is it, it looks horrible, oh my God, and then it becomes like this little, you know, sort of dark cloud percolating over the product because they saw something that was unfinished. But we keep bending over backwards saying, please don't, we're doing this for the feedback. And so it's really paid off, and the press has been great by sort of covering everything, going, here's a screenshot, but, you know, it's still in progress, et cetera. So that's just sort of an adjunct to the way we're putting the game together. It's funny, I just got an email with the latest ones right now.
Oh, nice.
Did you send new text in, Nathan?
No, not yet. I was writing it when you called.
Oh.
We're interrupting progress.
it looks like they threw a couple in. I'll send them to you.
Okay. Yeah, I added some last night. Maybe you haven't seen those yet. So
here we are. I love that we're hearing this in real time.
It's a surprise for your help. You heard of the radio have fallen silent, replaced by the thump of mortars and distant crackle of automatic fire. Does that sound
that's
right?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. All right.
Nice. And this podcast will actually come out tomorrow. So probably right around the time that this is all released.
I think he's gonna get it out before I wake up in the morning. So yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Cool. So we've covered the storyline. We've covered your influences. Were there any other types of influences that went into this new game versus the original Wasteland?
Well, for me, this is the first time that I've worked on a computer game, and I count myself as incredibly lucky because the computer games that I loved and the games that got me into writing computer games were Fallout, Fallout 2, and Torment, Planescape Torment. And all of a sudden I'm working with the people who made those games. And so my influences as far as the writing of Wasteland 2 is the games of the people that I'm working with. So I just, it's like I pinch myself every day because it's like, I cannot believe that I'm being allowed to work on this game with these people. It's amazing.
Yeah. We've spoiled Nathan. he gets to work with a bunch of rational people on an interesting project. he doesn't know how rare that is.
That's the most amazing thing about this. So, no, believe me, I worked in Hollywood for 20 years, so I know irrational. But the most amazing thing about this is I'll come up with an idea, and I think it's like as far outside just a crazy idea or a disturbing idea. And I'll go to Brian and Matt and say, hey, I've got this thing and you probably won't like it. And 9 times out of 10, they go, no, that's great. Go for it.
Like, dial it up.
More of that.
Well, I love it too because in a way, if you think about like you were influenced by these games, and in a way you've kind of earned it because you have become exactly, you know, the perfect person to write them. You played the original games and were part of this, and it's kind of cool to see that be a payoff that, you know, who better to write it than somebody who was influenced by it in the first place.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with that.
I always prefer, like, when the writers, like, I'd rather have to pull them back from their odd ideas than to push them to come up with them.
Yeah.
You know what? I have kind of a question, and this is kind of a shot in the dark. One of the things that I always like to hear about is kind of like a little behind-the-scenes stuff, you know, and what I wondered is if have you guys had anything happen behind the scenes? Maybe one of the builds you guys did where something funny happened or, you know, somebody kind of threw a joke in. I always get a kick out of hearing those kind of behind-the-scenes stories that would normally only be around the office. Like, did you see when so-and-so did this or this happened? And was curious to see if you guys had anything like that you could share.
One of the things you might have noticed in the first playable video we did back in February, one of the producer of the product, he's a big fan of that movie Super Troopers.
Yeah.
And did you see Super Troopers?
Yeah, yeah.
So he kept slipping the meow into the audio. So if you go back and listen to it. If you go back and listen to it, you'll hear a couple of meows, right, and then as he's describing the game, it's quite funny. So,
I love it. That's exactly what I was hoping for. Is a story like that? That's even funnier than I was expecting too. I'll have to write that one down.
Yeah,
that's great.
And I got so excited by the game that I wrote a theme song, and I recorded it, and I sent it to Brian and Matt. And didn't hear anything for about 10 days. So I went, okay, well, that didn't fly.
I think it was just the singing that threw us off.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. So yes, there have been some places where I have gone too far. It's like, hey, I'm going to write the theme song and design all the logos and do some sketches for the characters.
We use your logo for the Red Scorpions, didn't we?
No, it wasn't the Red Scorpions. I'm not sure who did that one, but God's Militia.
Oh, was that yours? Okay.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah, I mean, we do, they were working on character creation a couple of weeks ago and showing how you could go through and, you know, do all the different pieces of clothing and pants and weaponry, et cetera. And so, you know, guys will throw on, like, the Pope's hat, you know, and so we'll, of course, but whenever I see that stuff, I'm like, keep it. We need the Pope. I'm going to be able to play with four Rangers wearing Pope hats.
I want to be able to play as a full mariachi band.
Yeah, that's right. We let you play as the Three Amigos, you know. In fact, one of the things we're going to allow you to do when you're creating your characters is you can opt for triplets. So you can you can roll up a Ranger triplets.
Nice.
Oh, that's great.
A little nuclear fallout in there, cloning.
Yeah, well, I'm still trying to get the two-headed screaming goat.
Can we have that? That's great.
I told them to put it in. I mean, how great to have a goat screaming in stereo? It's wonderful.
So you mentioned before about playing current games. Are there any games that you play now that you particularly like?
Well, I finished the last BioShock, and I loved it for the first atmosphere. I think one of the things I focus on these days is how well did they pull off the atmosphere? I love that. I think I've seen pretty much every game mechanic at this point. So I love BioShock. I played XCOM for all the obvious reasons as it relates to these kind of games. I've liked Metro Last Light. I thought they did a nice job of capturing a post-apocalyptic atmosphere. I'm going to download The Last of Us tonight. I tried to buy it the other night. It was sold out. So, I mean, those are some of them.
I played Dishonored. That's what it's called, right? I like that a lot.
Yeah.
That was really good. I also played BioShock, but that's... it was weird playing it while writing this game because it's kind of the exact opposite. As far as your ability to do what you want.
Yeah, that's true.
So, that's weird.
What I think about Wasteland, you know, if you go to E3 and you see all the products, it's like they're all kind of are like tentpole summer releases. You know, they're all the kind of this big, over-the-top stuff. And I have a lot of admiration. I look at that, and that I know how hard it is and how much it costs. So I'm always amazed by it. But, like Wasteland's like the opposite of that. Like, you know, we're all about telling a more intimate story, and everything's, you know, it's a desolate wasteland. Things are more depressed and subdued. So we're everything that's not the big set piece.
Hmm. Wow.
Makes sense. Now,
we're the Blair Witch Project of
I think I can find a better analogy than that. But
sorry.
That's cool. So you've been playing a lot of games for research, it sounds like, as far as, I mean, I guess you definitely have to see what else is out there. But it sounds like you've been playing a lot of post-apocalyptic games, right?
I play that. I played Swapper, you know, it's a little indie game. You know, I play all these crazy little physics puzzles games on my iPad, you know, so it just isn't just those, you know. Company of Heroes I just downloaded, you know, so. But I've always tend to, like, I don't normally finish games. I usually put in, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours so that I get the gist of every game so I understand why, you know, what did I, you know, you need to experience games. So I always take notes. What bothered me, what didn't bother me. So when I get to our stuff, it's a constant reminder of what to do and what not to do.
Yeah, I played XCOM too, and the thing that I took from that was, even with the most minimal character creation and the inability to name the characters, you still became attached to them. And that attachment to the characters that you're playing, I think, is extremely important and something that we're trying to, you know, we want you to really, the people that you're playing should have meaning, and the people that you meet should have meaning. And I think that I picked some of that up from XCOM.
Yeah, I'm really happy with the personality of the CNPCs, you know, kind of what he was saying. Okay. And we have a greater ability to give them even more personality. Because remember, we're letting you roll up your rangers, right? So we don't know whether you're a Russian triplet women, right? We don't. You create what you want. So we're not. Your personality is sort of dictated by your actions, not so much as your dialogue, because you know you're role playing. But the characters you meet, they have very distinct personalities. We can do anything we want with them. It kind of reminds me of what was it, Elizabeth in BioShock?
Yeah.
I mean, she tended to have all the personality, not the main guy, you know? Yeah. And so in that same way, and we have characters, NPCs that you meet that have a tremendous amount of personality. And to add to the kind of the replay and reactivity, you can kick them out of your party early off in the game or kill them or whatever you want, and you'll miss sequences that happen 10 hours later than if they just happen to be in your party.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And in fact, some of them are like, you're kind of like at a disadvantage keeping them because they're not that strong, but they have such a fun personality. I know they're going to keep it. And we kind of recognize that. Say, well, anybody's going to keep on to this guy this long, they deserve a payoff. And so we try to plug that stuff in.
Yeah. Each of the major NPCs that can join your party has some kind of story. Of their own. And you may not find it if you don't go to a particular place, but if you go to that place, you find out what they're all about, and, you know, you might be able to help them with their story, or you can completely f*** it up for them.
Yeah, you piss them off.
Yep.
Nice.
Well, and that's going to be so much fun because, you know, like you said, and I'll use BioShock as an example like that. I mean, you know, everybody who comes out of it going, wow, Elizabeth was an interesting character. The story is amazing. But yet you do kind of move on to the next game. And it's funny, yet all these years later, I can still tell you who my companion characters were in Fallout 2 because there was just something, you know, or Planescape Torment even, you know, you remember these characters because they became meaningful to you and it stood out rather than just being about the story. You had like stories of your own within that story. And I love that you guys are kind of playing off that. And by the way, for that reason alone, you'll probably love The Last of Us, which was probably one of the most amazing games I've played this year. But it does the same thing. It really plays off when you're wanting to feel for the character. And but I love that you guys are doing that you're putting that kind of detail in it, because like you said, everybody's going to walk away with a completely different experience. And I love to be able to sit down with friends and go, "You did what?" And it reacted how?
Yeah, it's so nuanced and varied. It's crazy.
I love that. Oh, I'm so excited.
But that's what people are expecting. You know, not only do I have the pressure of, you know, this being a big Kickstarter project, but of course I have the whole Fallout crowd going, well, better, you know, I'm competing with the memories of how great Fallout and Wasteland was, which is sometimes even more difficult than the reality. But that's okay. You know, I'm very happy with where things are.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, I'd say that we are in sync with our fans in a major way.
Well, I think that's a good spot to wrap this up, but the journalist in me has to go for any kind of the exclusive and ask you if there's anything that you can tell us that you haven't told anyone else about the game that we can have as an exclusive here on the show.
That's for you, Brian.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking of what I could do. I mean, we're getting towards the end of the cycle, so I don't have the same sensitivities as I did, say, you know, 4 or 5 months ago. On the other hand, I don't want to have spoilers. Mm-hmm.
You can tell them about where we go to Mars.
The whole landing base sequence is fantastic. I think that's going to come out of left field. And when it flips to become a first-person shooter on Mars, I think they're going to... I just think that's going to go over great.
Yep.
So
there's this little book that you can find that's filled with paragraphs.
Yeah. what would I say that people don't already know about? That's what I'm trying to wrestle my brain. I mean, I think that... The trip to LA that I continue to hint about I guess the one thing I really haven't talked to anybody about, which I mentioned earlier, was this whole concept of revisiting what does the end of the game mean, and such that if you become a vigilante desert ranger, do I even let you go to LA? Are they really going to send you? Or are they instead going to send hit squads out against you? And so that's the kind of stuff that I'm pursuing, is to find when the players take some extreme actions, with lots of warning, by the way, so you don't just spin out, you know, suddenly, that we revisit what it means to end, right? Because I think too many times people are focused on, well, you get to the end of the game when there's three possible endings. Well, I see lots more possible endings than three.
Yeah, and... they can happen
other than game over, you're dead. I don't count that.
They can happen along the timeline.
Yeah, right. So that's something that I've never really discussed much about that we're going to be experimenting with. And there's a couple of points we already know about. And, you know, what does it mean? And what does game over mean? You know, so.
Oh, very cool. Well, I appreciate you guys coming on the show and discussing all of this. This has been a blast. I can't believe it's been over an hour. That's amazing to me. But yeah, thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for talking about everything, you know, relating to, you know, Jonathan and I are very nostalgic when it comes to gaming, especially, and we can sit here for hours, literally, and talk about the games that influenced us. But thanks again, guys, for coming on the show. And if anyone wants to check out more information, of course, there's the site itself, which is you can go to wasteland2.com, which will take you to the In Exile.
You know.
Page, right?
I might add one thing: is I get questions daily. That people, they've just heard about it. This is the first, and so we still have, for now, it's not going to be open forever, a Slacker backer store for people who still want to get in and, you know, buy a version for a less of a price or get their name in the game and all those kinds of things. So if you go to our website for that, and I bring that up because I think the whole world must know about Wasteland 2 by now, but they don't.
Yeah.
So, just want people to know that.
Okay, yeah, so they can go there and they can still... I mean, is it the same rewards and everything?
Yeah.
Okay, good. And that's... you can get that by going to wasteland2.com, and then there's also the Facebook page, which you can go to facebook.com, and it's /ranger.hq. It's for the Wayside, or you can just do a search for Wayside 2. And there are a lot of updates on there, I've noticed. It's updated very regularly, which is very nice. Not only the Kickstarter updates are on there, also whenever there's an interview, it goes up on there, and whenever there's certain little things here and there, like a mention of the Wayside 2 guru at curse.com, things like that. That seems like a really nice place for little one-off, you know, tidbits of information and news, which is really helpful. So people can check that out. And we will have links to all this in the show notes for today. So if anyone wants to check that out, they can go check that out at throughtheaftermath.com and throughtheaftermath.blogspot.com too, right, Jonathan? Is that still set up?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if you want to email me, and if you have any questions or anything about the show, you can email me, SeanSchuster@gmail.com. I think our Through the Aftermath one, ttaftermath@gmail.com, that's still set up. You can tell we do this show so often. Am I right? So check that out. Check us out on Facebook and Twitter. We will have this particular episode everywhere, pimping the heck out of it, because we're very excited about this. But again, thanks guys for coming on the show, and
thank you.
We're very happy to have you on, and we'll have to do this again sometime.
Cool. Thanks for the support.